Our guest this week on the Greg Hughes podcast is Canon David Skuse, Church of Ireland. Mm-hmm. Skuse, where did this name come from? And good morning to you and good afternoon or whatever, whenever people are listening to this.
My father grew up in Bessbrook in Northern Ireland, but his mother and father came from Cork County.
Right.
I think it's supposed to be of Scandinavian origins, but I'm not really sure.
Never curious enough to look. And I wouldn't be that type either, but some people just, they want to know everything.
Well, I have to say that it's a very handy name to get, except maybe the taxman's after you. Because I used to teach, and one of the youngsters said to me something about where to live. And I says, well, if you write a letter to me, put an envelope in the post and send it and say, David Skuse for a man, it'll get to me.
Yeah.
This was a Friday. I went home that weekend, and the letter was there for me without a stamp on it.
Wow.
And so I got there the following week, so we were the only ones in County Fermanagh.
Yeah, I would say so. It's mm-hmm. it's a nice name. You have announced your retirement as rector of the Dunfanaghy Union of Parishes. Now, dependent on when people listen to this, that may have already happened or it may be about to happen. But why the decision? Why now? You've spent 7 years serving the parishes of the Holy Trinity, Ray, Monterdonny. Rye and Ray, I always get confused with that. I'll get caught out.
It's sometimes called Rye, but the proper name is Rye Monterdonny.
And Killult Fulcara. So what?
Tullock Begley.
What's your time been like over the last 7 years?
Well, it's been grand, but one of the big drawbacks was the COVID came in just after I arrived, and it meant that it took a lot longer to get to know people because I arrived in May. And COVID came the following March, and you're only starting to get to know people. And then there's a lockdown, and just time is absolutely horrendous.
So you feel you've been, to some extent, and everything happens for a reason, sort of disadvantaged in maximising your time?
Well, it meant that you didn't get to know people in quite the same way, because we were very fortunate. We only had one funeral during COVID, but just the whole of parochial life was knocked haywire.
Talk to me about your early years. Where were you brought up?
I grew up in County Fermanagh, went to the local primary school in Derrygalney, then to secondary school in Enniskillen, and then on to university where I did a degree in chemistry, and then to Queen's to do a teaching qualification.
Yeah.
And I taught for 5 or 6 years.
And was religion on the agenda then? Were you a religious person?
I would always have been. I grew up in a background which would have had a Church of Ireland background.
Yeah.
And it's been very much part of life, everyday life.
Yeah.
Interacting, engaging, going to worship and all the rest.
Yeah. And would that made you an outlier at the time, I suppose, particularly secondary, third level, or were you amongst peers of a similar mind?
Well, my subject, the subject I went to do at university was chemistry, so it was more of a science bent. And I taught science primarily when I was in the secondary school teacher.
Did you enjoy school?
Do you mean as a pupil?
Mm-hmm.
Yes and no.
That's interesting that you'd like to sort of distinguish between as a teacher and as a pupil.
No. Well, there's a certain amount of bullying went on when I was at school.
Was that at an early age, secondary schools?
It's 12 to 18.
Which is the absolute worst time. How comfortable are you talking about that? How did that affect
mind.
You?
I don't mind.
So what was the nature of the bullying?
It's just I wouldn't go with the crowd because I didn't agree with what they were doing. And because you didn't go with the crowd, there's one or two then just decide to take it out on you.
Is that because you were more guided by religion than they? Or was it general misbehaving?
No,
or what?
It was just I didn't believe what they were doing was right.
Which was?
Well, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah,
it was just, you grew up in Northern Ireland where there's a lot of politics.
Yeah.
And I did not together agree with what the majority were going with.
Yeah.
And the result of that, you get picked on.
But to some extent too, you could argue, could you, that at that age they were effectively bullied into whatever activity they were involved in?
It probably would be.
Or at least conditioned by society.
Well, it's probably the conditions they were growing up, the environment they grew up in as well. Whereas I grew up in a different environment where it was always about showing respect and tolerance to other people and trying to accept difference.
Which is hard to stick to.
And really, ultimately, violence doesn't achieve anything.
Yeah. So would it have been a primarily predominantly Protestant community that you were raised in?
Well, in Northern Ireland, it's basically Protestants go to Protestant schools, Roman Catholics go to Roman Catholic schools. But really, the Protestant schools are state-controlled. Whereas Roman Catholic Church would be more maintain skills.
Yeah. And would then, what would the sort of, there would have been a strong dislike of Catholics though amongst your peers? No.
In Fermanagh, both the Church of Ireland Protestant community got on well with the Roman Catholic neighbours.
Even at that age, which
even
is
at that
good.
Age. And then there's a farming community and one would help out the other.
Yeah.
And there's a pretty good mix going on.
So were you delighted to get out of secondary school and onto third level?
I never really looked at it. Like, that was just a progression in life, that this is what happened next.
Well, you must have. It must have affected you, no?
It would have had an impact, I suppose, on me, and that the way in which I look at people, that I'd always try to show respect to people of different denominations, faiths, cultures. I tried to accommodate.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean to say you have to agree, but it's having a respect for people who are different to you.
We are moving further and further away from that, whereby, you know, there seems to be no desire, broadly speaking, to understand each other, to accommodate, and to have different opinions, but sort of stay in the same friend groups. And I'm talking more sort of, you know, political, global political, local politics. We do seem to be even, you know, less inclined to be friends with people with different points of views.
But I think that all stems back to the thing with the human rights, equality and everything else, that it doesn't matter what I do, my rights are more important than the rights of the other person.
Mm. So you studied chemistry. What happened from there?
Sorry, say it again.
You studied chemistry. Yeah. What happened from there?
Well, I wanted to teach, and I felt teaching science was far more engaging than maybe teaching maths, which was a slightly better subject for me.
Mm.
But to me, it was the engagement and getting to know people in a more informal setting.
Yeah, I get you. And then what, from third level, how did you progress then into your working life?
Well, after teaching, what happened, I suppose, was always at the back of my mind that was what I'd hoped to do. But I just felt that I need to prove myself in a different field before I went on for ordination.
Prove yourself to whom?
Myself.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Would you be very self-driven, self-motivated?
Not really.
Huh? Well, you must be.
No, well, it means what you mean.
Because you went through an entire...
No.
You went in through third level, went on to teach to prove to yourself that...
that does mean that you need to be careful what you say self-driven.
Okay.
It was just to prove to myself, not to others.
Right. And so explain if I've misframed that, because it's quite interesting, actually. You explain it the correct way.
Well, I wanted to prove myself that I could do another profession before I went for ordination, whereas a lot of people expect me to go straight forward from secondary school into ordination, which I didn't think was right to do.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it's not really... It was able to do something without people thinking that that was what I should be doing.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. And I suppose, does that help make you a more rounded individual as well?
It probably will, because it's just I like to take a look at the holistic approach and just get to know people as individuals.
Yes. And so when you take the decision to move from teaching to a ministry, is that a long drawn out thing or something that you're 50-50 on, or was this always part of the plan?
Well, I would say it's part of God's calling.
Yeah.
That's just the way things evolved.
Mm.
It wasn't like, to me, I grew up in the Church of Ireland, baptized, confirmed, and then was just an evolution. And then before I went for ordination, I was what's called a diocesan reader.
Yeah.
Which means that you can take services, but you can't do the sacraments and weddings.
Mm.
And as I said, it was just a slow progression. I suppose just an opening up or development as you progress in your journey of faith.
Yeah. And so at what age then did you begin that journey in earnest, you know, from teaching into the ministry?
Well, whenever I was teaching, I went on for the lay reader's course. I was probably about 24 at the time, and then I was commissioned as a lay reader, and then just things progressed on from that.
Yeah.
And I was selected for ordination.
Okay. And what was that like for you, the ordination? What age were you when you were ordained?
Well, that's a good question. About 27, 28.
Okay. So you move really relatively quickly, aren't you, from 24 to 27, 28. But as you say, this is a life journey as part of your...
Well, to me, I think for a lot of people, it's a journey of faith, gradually... an awakening, and we're always learning from the cradle to the grave.
Yeah.
And you come across new experiences. And one of the things I really liked in the national school in Dunfanaghy was I go in to take assembly, and I'm not the best of spellers and would spell words wrong when I do hangman, and also of a scientific background, so I'd be a lot more knowledgeable than some of the teachers on science. And I'd ask the youngsters a question and sometimes ask the teachers. And what I loved was the teachers would acknowledge to the pupils that they didn't know the answers. Everybody's learning together. And one of the end of school year services that they had in the church, I was talking about the man who built the house upon the rock and the house upon the sand. And it was great about the house upon the rock because you had no trouble with foundations. It says then what happens whenever you go to build a house in the sand. So you dug the hole out, got ready to get on with it. And next thing is the youngster says to me, you put in, I'm not going to get the word shuttering.
Mm-hmm. No, that's
and I
it, yeah.
hadn't got a clue what shuttering was. So the youngster and I had a whole discussion about what shuttering was and then continued on. And it's good for the youngsters to realise that I'm learning from them just as they're learning from me.
How did you come to be, so in other words, where did you practice? So from the age 27, 28 onwards, where were you based? You moved around?
I've moved about quite a bit. I was a curate since Colmes Cathedral. And then I went to the rector of Kilbarran, Drumholm and Rosnaila in South Donegal. I never thought I would been working in the Republic of Ireland. Then I moved north to Erne in Sion Mills. Then to Maguire's Bridge in Derry, Bruskin County, Fermanagh, and Inish McSaint. And then my last placing was the Dunfanaghy Group. And I never thought I'd end up my ministry in the South again.
Why did that seem unlikely at the time?
Well, I'm a Northern Protestant, grew up in the North, and just never thought I'd be working in the Republic. Just the way things were and the way things had evolved through the Troubles and that.
Yes, moments like that, times like that would have seemed incredibly far away. What has changed? Have we become more tolerant of each other?
It's just that particularly in my case, I served in the Diocese of Derry and Raphoe, and the place came up and I happened to get it, just in the evolution. And the parish of Kilbarran, Rosnaila and Drumholm, there's only a parish between it and where I grew up. But both parishes are in the north.
I would imagine one of the most challenging times for you, as it was for religious in other faiths and the community and county and country as a whole, was the Chrysler tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
What are your recollections of that day?
Well, it came through around the news at some stage in the afternoon, about 3 o'clock, that there'd been an explosion. And to me, it was terrible. And I just felt, well, what could I do? I have no use with machinery moving stuff or that. So I didn't go over. There was a prize giving in a full school that evening, went to it. And then going home that night, I just says, well, I'll go over and just wander around. And I didn't realise the impact that had on people because all I did was wander around. And from that, I suppose I've always been aware of this. It's the ministry of presence. A lot of people don't realise how important it is just being seen. And you don't have to say an awful lot, but just wandering around. And with the last victim to be found, it was several hours after the second last body had been found.
Yeah.
And I just went over to the family every so often, asked them, was there anything I could do or get them or that? Not that I really could do anything, but they just appreciate that somebody had taken from the church had taken an interest, and it was very, very important to them. And also several people afterwards said about how important it was for us to be seen wandering about. And Father John Joe Duffy, he asked me to assist the Taoiseach and the President whenever they attended the funerals. And little did I think, a Northerner, that I'd ever get that opportunity.
Yes, because those things too are. I mean, obviously, it's awful that it happens, but I suppose it's in a way too. It's been very important to you. It's been part of, you know, God's journey for you, and I think it seems it was important that you were there at that time and how you held yourself and being present.
I didn't realize how important it was to the people off Chrysler and the surrounding areas that I was there. John Joe was there. The other clergy were there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just taking interest in people, because we live in a world where people are very, very devalued, and they want to be felt wanted, they want to be appreciated, they want to be acknowledged.
Yes, and I think maybe there is lessons to be learned, because, I mean, given the nature of the radio show I present, you know, people often don't know what to say when things happen or how to support people around them. And you know, maybe there's sometimes actually really what you need to be is present.
Oh, I'd agree.
And not necessarily trying to figure out what the right thing to say is.
Well, for Chrysalis, there's no answers as to why it happened, why it was those people. They may find out what caused the explosion from that point of view. But why should it happen? You can chat till the cows come home, but there's no real reason as to why it was you, maybe you instead of me.
Yeah.
And even with say, whenever there's a funeral or whatever, to me, I think for the clergy, well, for me personally, I feel that it's just being there, answer the question, explain what's going on. Because for some families, that might have been the first time they've had a funeral in years. They don't know what goes on, what's happened. And the undertaker and the cleric come in and they help them through that process and guide them through. And they can ask questions, but quite often I'll not have the answers. And you're far better being upfront saying, I don't have the answers, rather than bluffing them.
Yeah. For what going through that, because you know obviously, you know, you like myself, but yours in a far more important way. We heard about it. We were there. We were there for a very long time. Things unfolded and we start to realize the extent of this, and then the funerals, and then after the fact. Like, I suppose two questions. What did you learn about the community or community in general, and where we're at now? And I suppose, what did you learn about yourself through such a traumatic event?
Well, I think it was just partly the way the community all came together to support and help each other. Particularly the night of the explosion, the coffee pot opened up and there's food there for everybody. And people sent in food from all over the place to feed the people who are helping out. And just the great community effort. Not only Chrysalis, Letterkenny, the whole county, and even all over Ireland. For myself, it's just the ministry of presence and being there to listen, to help people as best you can. Because quite often, whenever tragedy strikes, even say a sudden death or whatever, the only person that might be known there is actually the local clergy. Because I remember somebody died in suddenly in the north, and what happened was that the doctor was called, the police were called, they're all strangers. Whereas the clergy might not have been known to the family, but somebody would have that seen the clergy wandering about. And it could just give people a wee bit of reassurance that there's somebody they know, because nowadays you're dealing with strangers.
And I suppose what's interesting in it, especially in a time of great crisis or what have you, it really doesn't matter what your religious background is or what church you're a part of or what church Father John Joe is a part of. Really, it doesn't matter. It's just to be present in that time.
To me, whenever I went to Ballyshannon, Ballintrae, Snaila, one of the things I found interesting was with the Roman Catholic community, whenever I left, was they were sorry to see me go.
Does that surprise you?
It did.
Right.
Well, it did and it didn't, because really I didn't know a lot of people, because we're such a small community and really I'm just mixing with, in general, Church of Ireland people.
I get you.
But if I'm going down the town, I would say, hello, how are you? And the fact is that you just acknowledge people on the street. It meant an awful lot to them. And I didn't realise how important that is, because we're living more and more in a world where people are just commodities to be exploited. And people want to be wanted, they want to be acknowledged. And I just didn't realise that how important that was.
Yeah. I think some of it is, I don't know what you think, but some of it's sort of like, you know, there's going to be a reset of sorts, or, you know, that we're in some sort of a cyclical situation that, you know, we can't keep going. I think already we're retreating somewhat, if you know what I mean. I don't think we're going to become this bland, no one speaks to each other, blah, blah. I think it's already starting in small ways and it'll happen in a great way, that we are social creatures and we have to function and survive. I think we have to be like that. And I think there'll come a point whereby we insist that we sort of return a little bit more to community.
I do. I think particularly one of the things during COVID, what really struck on my mind was a granny was talking about what she felt was horrendous during COVID was her teenage grandson coming in to give her a hug and a kiss. And I think we realize the importance of that social contact, that social engagement.
Yeah. When you look around you in the world, does it look hopeless, or do you see lots of hope, or what do you see as our greatest challenge as humans?
I think the people who are in positions of power need to be challenged by the attitude they take, particularly whenever you see what's going on in the Middle East, Ukraine and Russia, where you have a president who seems to change his mind every so often, and then he criticised the Pope for challenging him for what he was doing.
Mm.
And there comes a point whenever people in positions of power need to be challenged over what they do, and they need to realise what is right and what is wrong. And I think maybe one of the drawbacks with the church is that the church has cozied up too much with the state, that the church hasn't been prophetic in speaking out against what is wrong.
Yes, and a perfect example of that, you could argue, certainly from the Catholic faith perspective, was the recent vote in the Dáil, recent to when we're recording this, whereby Sinn Féin proposed to change the legislation that would remove the three-day cooling off period, or whatever it's called in the case of abortion. Now, whether people agree with abortion or don't agree with abortion, I think what we got definitely, or what I got, was a great disappointment that the church, and maybe it still feels it can't stick its head above the parapet, but because, you know, people might sort of go, well, look what you did and this, that and done, but that the church was absent in that debate, even just to offer guidance to its members. And I'm speaking more from the Catholic Church, but you could say the same of all churches, really, I suppose.
You could, but again, it takes a courageous person to get up and speak out against the majority.
But we expect that from our leaders, don't we?
We do.
We should.
We do, but it's just that is a hard one. As I say, clergy are like everybody else. We're humans. We don't get everything right.
Mm.
And it's easy to say that you should speak out on this or that. It didn't happen.
But I think it's almost death by a thousand cuts, because, you know, I think this might sound like a strange connection, but, you know, the Donald Trump was able to speak about the Pope in a way that would have been completely unacceptable. If that was 15 years ago and he was privately recorded making those comments and it were released, it could be actually something that removes his position. But the churches, you could argue, have kowtowed and lacked, you know, maybe a little bit of fortitude that allows those kind of comments to go by, as if to say, you know.
Well, I suppose it was the same with the politicians whenever Trump was elected, the way he berated the political leaders.
Quite true, yeah.
And they didn't challenge him. Take a look at the Italian president, the way he challenged him over his behaviour. And sometimes there has to be a period of time where maybe badness seems to be winning, but there comes a point when there's a return back to normality that people say, that's wrong. I think there is just a point where there's a critical mass where it then takes off, and whenever it takes off, there's no mercy. And the other thing is, particularly with politicians, is that once they feel a party leader's a liability, they will withdraw and turf the person out.
Yeah.
And also possibly with the churches, in certain parts of the world, the tide's going in, and other parts of the world, it's going out. And maybe we're just going through a period here in Ireland where the tide's going out.
Yes.
And there'll come a point when people will say, right, we have to be a lot clearer in the way we speak.
Is there any frustration, or do you have any frustration, you know, with your church, for an example, in terms of some of the stuff that we've been talking about? And I don't mean the similar issues. I don't actually mean the issues themselves, just in terms of, you know, how churches are run, where they see their place in society, or how assertive otherwise they are. Does it frustrate you at all?
I haven't really got involved more in the hierarchy, the governance of the church. I would say more working down at base level, ground level.
But you are affected by the upper echelons, the hierarchy.
Oh, you would be, and each person has their own personal view as to the way in which the church is governed, the way certain.
And what's your view?
It'll be hard to articulate in a few minutes.
But it's obviously. Not to heap praise, if you know what I mean.
Oh no, to me, You're not there for glory. You're there to work with the people in times of happiness and times of sorrow. And to me, the other thing is, if you take a look at the gospel story, Jesus associates himself with the outcasts, the marginalized people of society. And sometimes I wonder if the church does that enough, or the clergy do that enough, that they engage with the people who are on the breadline. You talk about abortion, you talk about, one thing I would have with the children born out of wedlock, some clergy won't baptize children out of wedlock. To me, it's not the child's fault as to how it was conceived. And I personally feel that you shouldn't deny baptism to a child, because it's for God to judge, not for me to judge.
But that being said, is there not a counterpoint that churches, generally speaking, have tried to accommodate to maintain, you know, the size of them, to the point whereby it's really kind of hard to know what they stand for? There's quite a strong school of thought out there that even if churches or religious groups are smaller and more packed, compacted, well, that's fine if you stick to the values, you know, conservatism and what have you, rather than trying to be all things to all men.
But who was Jesus there for?
Mm.
Jesus didn't get on with the religious authorities this day. His whole thing was engagement, and engagement with people that other people wouldn't associate with. Like Matthew was a tax collector who was despised and detested. Judas Iscariot, I think, was equivalent to our modern day terrorist. And the story of the Good Samaritan, the fellows left for dead on the ground. The priest and Levi walked by on the other side, totally ignored him. And the one who helped the person in need was the Samaritan, the person detested and disliked by the Jew. And that was a question asked by the next expert in law to try and catch Jesus out. And Jesus said, love God, love your neighbours, yourself.
Interesting.
And to me, I think with that, with Christians, it's love God, love your neighbours, show respect.
The basics.
Absolutely.
To
me, I think Christianity goes to the basic outliving of your Christian witness and how you engage with other people. And that's what really counts.
Why the timing of your retirement now as rector of the Dunfanaghy Union of Parishes? Pardon my ignorance. Does that mean you will travel elsewhere, or is that you sort of retired from ministry as
well,
a whole?
I could have gone on to 75.
Yes.
But I'm 70 this year. To me, it's just, I feel the time's right to retire.
Yeah.
And I will retire back home to near where I grew up. And I'll still be able to take part in service on Sunday. And one of the great things is I get rid of all the administrative side, which is becoming more and more of a nightmare.
How much of your week is taken up with that stuff?
It'd be hard to gauge, but it's just paperwork and it must be done and that sort of thing. And I'm not great at paperwork.
No, why is that?
Just the way I'm made.
Okay, yeah, that's all right. You'll also be able to do, presumably, if you have more time, more of what you love, cooking.
You heard about me cooking?
I heard about your cooking, yeah. You're a good host, I hear.
Well, I throw food in and it comes out.
Come on, I think you're...
No.
I think
no,
you're playing it down.
If you ask a certain priest, he'll keep telling you that I do the best roast potatoes.
Right, okay.
But it's a gift I have and it's no bother to me.
Mm.
I remember one evening I had asked a number of people around, and whenever I counted the number in the room, there were two more than I expected. I'd forgotten two people. So what did I do? Just sat in other two places. And if they don't like it, they know where the front door is.
I was going to say you're a great host, and I was thinking, right, okay. But listen, that's the T's and C's, right, if you come in. And I think you mentioned to Caroline, someone mentioned it to her on your behalf, this is kind of my philosophy here, 180 degrees and bang it in, that's it.
No, it's a wee bit more than that.
Is it 190?
No, 180 for 2 hours.
All right, okay. That does it all.
Usually does most things.
Yeah. Motorcycles as well, you know, I think it's really quite interesting. I don't know.
I wonder where you heard that.
Well, I don't know. I have my sources that you are an avid biker and have a bike.
I have, yeah.
What is it?
A V-Storm 650.
Okay, that's a big one, isn't it? Is that?
It's not the biggest, but, no, it's, of course, big, it's, enough, not. But it's big enough for me.
Yeah, all right. And do you get out on it much?
Maybe I'll get out a lot more whenever I retire.
Yeah.
because I just really use it more for pleasure rather than for parish work.
Of course. And do you have a bucket list with the bike? Is there somewhere, an adventure you'd like to go on?
No, I've done the adventure. Really? Wanted to go on.
Okay, that's right, because you took a bit of a sabbatical. Was that on bike?
No, the sabbatical was something else.
Right, so when did you fulfill your motorcycling itch?
March this year.
And what did you do?
Went to New Zealand for 4 weeks.
Oh, wow.
I've always wanted to go to New Zealand, and the opportunity arose and the finances.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was a great experience. And what the most interesting bit was, when I crossed from the Cook Straits from the South Island to the North Island, there was this northern accent that stood out a mile. Now, it doesn't normally stand out as much, but because I hadn't heard it, and I just says to this fellow, "Where are you from?" He says, "From County Fermanagh." I says, "Whereabouts?" He came from the other side of Lower Lough Erne, where I grew up. And we chatted a bit more. He actually went to school with my brother and worked with my brother.
Yeah, I it does worry me sometimes how small the world is.
Oh, it is.
And also it excites me. Mm-hmm. So that was wonderful. You never obviously switch off as such, but as much as one can, I mean, you've got your own personal prayer time and all that kind of stuff. Did you just do it as a civvy?
Oh, yeah. Whenever you say that, I've gone on another number of other tours throughout Europe. And I prefer people to get to know me as a person rather than what I do. So if they ask me what my occupation is, I says guess. And one particular time, they weren't going to speak to me. And if I had done the job that they thought I did, I'd be the first person to investigate their books whenever I got back home.
Right.
Okay. Because I thought I was either the taxman or the Vatman.
I was going to try and make a joke about a Vatican man, but I can't do that with you. But anyway, it's something else altogether. So that New Zealand thing was, had you already made a decision to retire, or the trips that you've had this year cop and fasten that for you?
It's just part of the way things worked out, and the date that I was going to retire has been a bit flexible in my own mind. And I saw the tour to New Zealand, and I went ahead and booked it. And then with the way other things worked out, the retirement dates tied in with that, because I just made a canon of St. Union's Cathedral on the anniversary of my ordination to the priesthood. I did my announcement on the anniversary of my institution, and the service next Monday night is the anniversary of my ordination to the diaconate. Brilliant. So there have been highlights within my own personal year that just happened to work out.
You also travelled to South Africa, didn't you? That's the sabbatical I mentioned. Yeah. That would have been more of a more in line with your 9-to-5, so to speak, would it?
Well, no, I don't think we're quite a 9-to-5 job.
That's what people say about me.
Well, now, if you want to go down...
Mine's not 9-to-5.
Well, people sometimes say to me, you know, you only work one day a week. I just like to
correct
you. No, I'd like to correct you. I said it's only half a day a week if you're going that avenue. No, what happened was I talked to the bishop at the time, and you're allowed to have a sabbatical every so often. And after... It took a fair while to work out what I was going to do. I got the opportunity to go to Port Elizabeth in South Africa. And there was the Episcopal Church of South Africa. And they had the main church in the town of city of Port Elizabeth. And they had a link up with a church in the township. And I was working in the township during the week. And it was basically a soup kitchen where they prepared food for people. I found just a wonderful experience. And I would say one of the things that I learned from that there is, before you pass any comments on anything, try to walk in the shoes of the other person, that you experience what they've come through and gone through.
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but it kind of harks back to, you know, your remarks on the churches and maybe the need to get back to that.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can, you know, to actually get better understand the people that you came to care for.
Well, to me, the pastoral work is very important. It's trying to get to know people.
Mm.
And that's what really counts.
Yeah, it's interesting because I speak to lots of people in the same line of work as you, and I hear the same thing about this detachment from on the ground and up on high, and not specific to any church. It's just I hear it more than it could be a coincidence. Canoeing is also another pastime that you enjoy.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Did you canoe to Tory Island?
I did.
The whole way?
And back.
Mm-hmm. In one day, no?
No. We went out one day, and we spent 2 or 3 days on the island, and then we came
back. How long did it take to canoe out there?
two or three hours. I'm not really sure.
No, it must have been longer than that. It's an hour. I think you're doing yourself a disservice of endurance there.
No, that was younger when I had no sense. But it was, what happened is whenever I grew up in Lough Erne, my father had a yacht and we sailed in Lough Erne. And then whenever I was teaching, I got involved with the Scouts. And I then did canoeing courses and ended up a senior instructor for sea canoeing. Mm. It gave an opportunity one afternoon a week to take children out canoeing. And then the area board at that time did a 10-day residential. And we took the youngsters down to Gola and Inishbofin. And some did canoeing, some did sailing, and some did hill walking. And particularly with that time we did the canoeing on the West Donegal, what you found out very, very quickly were the children you could trust your life to, and the ones you wouldn't have near you.
Mm.
And then doing the training to be a senior instructor, we got the opportunity to go to Tory Island.
Mm. It's lovely to go there, you know, by ferry, but I can only imagine
it can be quite rocky in the ferry
Course, but I can only imagine in canoes as it comes into sight and making you up there. Sounds fantastic. What a wonderful thing to do, and you didn't even have to leave the country as such to do it.
It was fantastic going out. It was almost flat calm, and coming back was a different story.
Yeah,
just the tides and the rockiness of the seas.
Don't you imagine? Mm-hmm. You'd be glad to go home. Staying on course actually would be one of the greatest challenges.
Well,
there,
basically what you do is you look at where you're going.
Yeah. Okay.
And with the tides and the wind and all the rest, you automatically compensate for where you're heading towards.
Mm. The Church of Ireland's much bigger in Donegal than people might imagine.
It is, yeah.
In
the Republic.
In the Republic, mm-hmm. So what, in terms of the population, do we have a rough count as to...
I really wouldn't know. I've heard maybe 8%, but I could be totally wrong.
I mean, that's really quite significant, isn't it?
It is. It's reasonable, but not compared to Northern Ireland.
Yeah. No, of course not. But I just think too, you know, if that's considered enough in terms of media coverage or programming, or like, it's a considerable proportion of the, like, for example, if you look at the amount, and this is in no way to compare groups of individuals, but if you look at the amount of coverage that you might have to, you know, members of the traveling community or people of different races or creeds or sexuality, the number of members of Church of Ireland are far greater than nearly all of those groups put together.
Yeah.
And yet you don't hear really great deal. Sometimes it's a bit of tokenism.
Well, I
feel underrepresented in modern life here in Ireland, I wonder.
It could be, but to me, the Church of Ireland is sort of middle of the way with the Christian faiths. We're not extremely Catholic, we're not extremely Reformed, we're in between, and we're not a particularly aggressive church.
The way that you and Father John Joe, for an example, have worked together, and also how you've represented the community and how that community has come together, regardless of what anyone's religious or background otherwise might be, is that almost like, you know, what we need to see more of on a county-wide stroke countrywide situation? Is there enough sort of inter-community, cross-community dialogue and involvement happening?
There's not enough. Again, partly it's to do with the hardliners in each particular denomination.
Mm.
And by taking that sort of approach, depending upon where you are, you can get an awful lot of flack. And you're saying earlier on about the church not speaking out more clearly. To me, I would have had experience in life where it wasn't accepted that I was going too far for my tribe and they didn't like it. And one of the things about where I am at the moment is that's not a problem. And to me, I always have that you treat the other person with respect and dignity. You may not agree with them, but you treat them with respect, regardless of their denomination or faith. And particularly with John, Joe and myself, we'd got to know each other before the Creasel explosion. And our two personalities are very similar, even though we're different denominations. And I get on well with other priests in the area, but John Joe and I would just have a particularly good relationship. And since the explosion, that's got even better. But it's just we have a respect for one for the other, and we can talk quite frankly without feeling we're going to be berated for our position.
I really think we should be able to do that.
Because with some people, if you say certain things, they might think that you're out to attack their denomination. Mm. But to me, you need to talk about, you know, you go to the communion service, what really happens in the communion service, because with the Roman Catholic Church, it's transubstantiation. Go more reform, it's a memorial of what happened.
Yeah.
And to me, there needs to be more of those frank discussions where you get to know, you can talk things out. It doesn't mean to say you have to agree with, but to talk things out and have an understanding and a respect.
Yeah, Father John Joe, obviously the church he's a member of, you know, it's he's on his own. That's the rules, right? No marriage, what have you. Yours, not so much, but you have remained single your entire life, or, well, that's too loaded a question. You're single now.
Well,
such,
I don't know what could happen.
No children. Unlikely. You never know.
Well, nobody'd have
But
me.
Has that been a choice?
No, nobody'd
and
have
why
no,
not?
No, nobody'd have me.
It could be someone who's very much into eating and motorbikes.
True. My brother said that one of the great things about me is I can go off whenever I like, however I like, without having to worry about the wife,
100%,
children, or finances.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Yeah, it just never came your way.
It just never happened. And I've been able to do things I otherwise wouldn't be able to do. And I suppose not being married has advantages. It's like everything, there's advantages and disadvantages. If you're married, you have a wife, you have children, and you hopefully have the support of the wife and children. If you're on your own, you can go off and do your own thing. Or if you get a phone call in the middle of the night, you don't have to say to your wife what's going on or what's happening.
I think if when you have the freedom of choice, it's whatever suits.
True.
You know, and it's subjective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could have the most unhappiest person in a, what might seem like a wonderful, loving relationship, and the happiest of persons that you might think seems lonelier on their own. Yeah. It really is just, yeah. And
everything is advantage and disadvantage, good points and bad points.
Yeah.
And it's also working with
the cards you dealt. Yeah, of course. So your plans now is, by the way, how big of an emotional pull will it be? Now, I know you're not going far away, but you are retiring, and I presume you'll want to get more involved in your home community and maybe pursue more of the stuff that you enjoy pursuing. But how big of a pull will it be leaving?
I've moved, as mentioned there earlier, to 7 different places and sort of got used to.
You have
to
be conditioned
on.
To do that, can't you? You have to condition yourself to be able to do that in your job, don't
well,
you?
Well, to me, well, the different with the job, but the difference with what I'm doing now is I'm relinquishing the responsibilities of running a parish.
Yeah,
and to me, that is fantastic. I'm getting away from all the administrative side, and I think partly one of the problems with clergy now is so much of their time is taken up with administration that if I help out, I would be able to do more of the pastoral.
Was there not a time whereby you would have people that would help you with that?
Not to the same extent with, we'd be small parishes. Yeah. There'd be people who would be able to do a certain amount, but there's a certain amount that just lands on the rectors.
And there's nothing you can do.
Nothing.
Nor
can do
would you want to. It's part of the job. It's just you choose not to do it now. So you're
well,
excited.
It's not my forte.
You're excited about the future.
Sorry?
Are you excited about your future?
Well, I'm looking forward to one of the main things I'm looking forward to is living in my own house. No,
I know. It's so simple, but at the same time, you can see why.
And like whenever I say that, I have nothing against any of the houses I lived in.
Of course.
But
not.
It just wasn't my house.
Yeah.
And you weren't free to do whatever you like, yeah, whenever you like. That's one of the things I'm really looking forward to. I'm growing up close to where I grew up, and I'll still be able to help out at certain things in parish life.
Brilliant. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I'm sure many of those that you've engaged with over the years, not just here, obviously, with the nature of podcasts, there's people that in other places that you've been based as well will be listening. And I'm sure they'll be delighted to hear from you and wish you nothing but the health and happiness to enjoy your retirement. You are obviously a healthy man.
Well, pretty healthy. But one of the things is I don't realise, I think, the impact my going will have. There's one parish that I did leave, and this woman, she'd been in her 80s, and she says, you know, we're very disappointed you're leaving. I says, why? You'll not be there to take my funeral. I says, why would you want me to do your funeral? But she just would said a couple of things, and you'd be there to take the funeral. I says, well, why would you want me? You'd say nice words about me. I says, what makes you think I'm going to say nice words about you? But anyway, I did end up taking part in her funeral, and whenever I started to say a few words about her, the ones at the back of the church started to snigger because I knew what was coming next. Because whenever we were in Ballantrae, they had a guest tea. and we're talking about what we were going to do, and there was going to do a salad lunch with turkey and ham, and I got some turkey and ham out of the shop, which I thought was great, and I produced the turkey and ham where the meeting was taken. She was a wee small woman sitting in the armchair, and whenever she saw me coming with the turkey and ham, she straightened herself up to her full height in the chair and says, "There's no way we're serving that plastic turkey and ham." And I said that at her funeral, and the ones at the back knew what was coming next and started laughing. And to me, that was just all about engagement, being able to talk, being able to laugh. And to me, that's what ministry's all about.
Yeah, and it she wanted you there and you were there. Okay. Mm-hmm. Canon David Skews, thank you so much for joining us, and the best wishes going forward.
Thank you very much for interviewing me.